We ready to roll?
Yeah.
Okay, who's gonna lead off?
Shovel in my drum.
I'll let you lead off, then you can turn it over. How's
okay.
That?
We're here to talk about with WashDOT, and they're going to be giving a presentation on the SR 500 Northeast 42nd Avenue and Northeast 54th safety study. I don't know if it would be helpful for you to, I don't know if you know everybody in the room, if we can do a quick introduction.
Okay.
So I'm Kathleen Otto, I'm the HR director and the deputy county manager.
John Blum, county council.
Julie Olson, county council.
Jeannie Stewart, also on the SR 500 Executive Committee.
Eileen Quiring, County Council. Sorry.
Mark Paul. Keith
So good morning. Thank you for having us. Carly will be driving most of this, though. Chris Strickler, Southwest Washington, Regional Administrator, WashDOT.
And my name is Carly Francis. I'm the Region Planning Director for Southwest Washington and WashDOT. So we are here to talk about SR 500. We've been working on a safety study in that area since November, December last year. Can you hear me okay? All right, great. The purpose of this study was to find cost-effective strategies to reduce crashes on SR 500 and also seek to maintain pedestrian and bicycle access across SR 500 in this urban area. I know we gave an update to council when we first started the process at a council time event several months ago, so this is, we're coming to a close on the study, so this is a follow-up. This is where we're at in the process. We are working on getting information from the online open house finalized and ready to send out so folks have an understanding of what the conclusion of the study is and then next steps. I did want to cover a little piece of information. There's been some confusion about whether or not there were funds for 42nd and 54th to do major improvements at those locations previously. The department did identify solutions at these locations as well as St. John's through a 2002 environmental assessment, but that was not a funding activity. The St. John's interchange did receive funding through the Transportation Partnership Act that came around in 2005. That was substantially completed in 2012. That funding package did not include funding for 42nd, 54th. Referendum 51, if folks remember that happened in 2002, St. John's funding and 54th and 42nd funding was included in that package, but that package was referred to voters and was voted down across the state. So that was the one place where there was a moment where it looked like there was funding for those two sets of improvements. The latest transportation funding package, Connecting Washington, did not include funding for 42nd and 54th. The region has been clear about the interest in making improvements there. It's been on RTC's list for a significant period of time, but it has not been realized to have funding for construction. So for the study, we wanted to make sure that in light of recognizing the past history about major improvements at these locations and the conversation we wanted to start based on the crashes that we were seeing in the corridor, that we did a broad set of outreach. This is a list of the audiences that we work to connect with, so emergency services, neighborhood associations, stakeholders, obviously agencies, as well as users. And specifically, we really did, again, a broad brush on outreach. This included some significant volume of translation into Spanish and Russian because of limited English proficiency prevalence in the area, specifically mostly in the city south of SR 500. We did a lot of online outreach. We had a survey early on that had about 2,500 participants who responded. The online open house that we had about 2,500 unique users who came to look at the open house, and we received over 950 comments on the concepts that were vetted in those locations. Because of the hard-to-reach nature of some of the neighborhoods and folks who live in the area, we did also do some significant direct mailings. So around the online open house time, we actually took each of the three visuals for the concepts and had them in a mailer to go out to houses. So it wasn't just an announcement that the online open house was there, but it was also trying to drive some information into people's mailboxes so that they understood the difference of what we were talking about now versus what they might have understood from the past. We did also use a fair amount of school-based outreach here, which is another sort of a newer tool for the department. Specifically with respect to how effective that was at reaching folks who are located really and have maybe an origin or a destination for their trip in the project area, the darkest color here, so on the left, this is the survey respondents. So we saw most folks, the heaviest volume of respondents was right from directly around the locations, the two intersections. Similarly, in the online open house, we saw that the greatest concentration of participants was also from that same area. So I think it was relatively decent opportunity and reflection of getting the word out to folks who might be most affected by the changes. We did ask for community input on priorities. This is sort of a values assessment of what folks felt was most important. We asked both in the survey that we put out, and we also asked in the online open house for a re-ranking of these. Safety came out at the top in both. I will note that the property impacts that show up in survey two as second, we had defined property impacts very clearly in the first survey to say that was essentially a need to purchase property or other types of actual sort of change in hands of ownership. We did not do that same clarification in survey two, so I think that why property impacts is up higher in that one is really because folks see that as all of the bundle of access rights that maybe come with the property that they have. So I think that's a reflection of folks being interested in access to and from SR 500.
I have a question.
Sure.
If we can go back one slide.
Absolutely.
Because it's too small.
It's too small
me to read.
Yes.
Will you tell me where the red section ends on the second map?
On the second map.
And east. What is east of? Is that 500?
So, let's see. I will use my finger.
Okay.
And I'll do what I can for location, because I'm not sure what this street is up here.
To the east more than anything. East. Yeah.
So I believe that this cutoff line here looks like it's probably Andreessen, but I would ask my friends in the room to see.
Andreessen.
Does that answer your question?
I think so, but it seems very surprising to me that.
And I can
hear. When you talk about trips, 20 to 99.
What's the thing that's surprising?
Am I reading that wrong?
Well, what's the thing?
No, I'm talking about this one. 20 to 99. Yeah.
This is for folks who responded to the survey, and we said, where are you starting your trip? And so this is where they started their trip.
Right. So this is survey respondents, not a total capture of every user.
Oh, it's not everybody. No.
Right.
No.
It's a heat map for the different survey respondents.
So really what it tells you is how effective were we at reaching folks who travel and who have an origin or destination in that area. So that was really what it was. It's a reflection of how effective the survey was at getting to the folks that I think we wanted to target, because through users have a different outcome and benefit from these activities versus folks who live there.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Thank
exactly.
You.
So to that same point, though, the people who were given information about going online to provide input were predominantly people located in those zip codes, correct?
So we drove people to the online activity through online outreach. So there was that broad brush of sending things out through Facebook and anybody who sort of likes WashDOT or other things. So there are all those broad brush strokes that really do, I would say, a much larger cast. We did do the mailings, which then was targeted to folks closer to the area and said, we're doing this thing and we want to make sure you're aware of it. So there was a balance, I would say.
Yes. So when we say that the people that are the most affected responded, I don't think that's necessarily true. It's only those responses we got.
Yes.
That does not cast the broader net for all the people that are affected by changes or improvements or safety and on SR 500.
I think that's fair. I think the point really being that the balance of folks who did respond were more representative of folks directly adjacent to the intersections versus not. And for those folks, that was sort of, I think for us, given the fact that we were really talking about very different opportunities for access, mm-hmm. that was something that, because of that sort of direct and different effect, mm-hmm. I felt like it was important to make sure that that was where we got the heaviest response from, because it meant that we were trying to really drive that input.
Sure.
There is a gap there for representation of through users. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think it's easier to see and understand the effects for them. Because it's really a lot of the ideas that we were talking about were pretty simple, and the primary metric for their impact is, are the signals there and what amount of delay do they create? And by that delay, what amount of risk for crashes is there? Beyond that, I think that's the primary point of care for through users. I may be wrong, and I'm open to hearing feedback about that not being right for those folks who are really traveling through. But that, to me, seems like the primary point of concern and care, and it's something that's in our nature to consider very easily. The folks that are affected by access changes, that stuff is a little harder for us and is more, to me, more important to hear direct feedback from folks who would have that effect, to understand what they see as those effects.
So I'm not suggesting that responders don't have a legitimate, I'm just suggesting that we haven't reached all the people that are indeed affected.
Absolutely.
If we could look at what the priorities are most important. So there was Survey 1 and Survey 2.
Yes.
In Survey 2, the order of importance seemed to change, where property impact became the number 2 question.
Yes.
How do we account for the difference in that response? Because it's a substantial difference.
Yes.
Tell me what we think property impacts.
Right. So in the first survey, we defined it very clearly to say property impacts are typically something like a purchase. So either we need to purchase a property outright or we need to buy a portion of property. Because typically that's how we define it. In Survey 1, we actually had a definition, property impacts, and we had sort of a parentheses and said, this means X. And it was essentially purchase of property. In the second survey, we didn't do that, so that was an oversight on our part to not have that same definition in there. So to me, that property impacts rising higher is essentially folks thinking, these are the things that I am afforded by where I live, which I would assume for them translates to, how do I access things around me? And so to me, I think that property impacts rising on that chart is a proxy for, I want to retain the access that I have.
And it may impact my property value for resale if to a buyer, if my access to main thoroughfares is changed. We can't read minds.
Right, and there's also a complicated way to consider that in property value. So, because I think it goes back and forth depending on how calm your streets are versus the access that's afforded to a parcel.
And I would add that I would say over the last 10 to 15 years, we've been in and out of property acquisition conversations because of the larger build concept. And so my guess is without that definition in the second survey, there's probably that question out there of, so are they talking about property impacts as far as acquisition or not? And I think that's likely a contributor. It's tough to define, honestly, without drilling down deeper, but my guess is that has something to do with it.
And regarding the property that was purchased by WSDOT, that is on, I think, the north side of SR 500.
Correct.
It would be the northwest corner. Is there an intent to hold on to that property until we determine in the long run what improvements are necessary in this corridor?
Yeah, so typically, and Carly will go through the schedule of what we hope to kind of talk through for the several phases of where we sit today, and that'll be important to the property portion. But we have no intention of surplusing at this point because we don't know what that future need is yet, and so we would retain the property. At some point in the future, though, if we have general agreement that, and I mean well into the future, by the way, but if we have general agreement that we've got either solutions in place or solutions that don't require it, then we'll consider surplus. But that's not on the table right now.
So it's probably important to hang on to that flexibility for now.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So as Councilmember Stewart mentioned, she was on the executive committee for the study. We also had a technical advisory committee that was comprised of city staff, county staff, Southwest Washington Regional Transportation Council, as well as CTRAN. All of those bodies were also represented on the executive committee. And through a process with those parties, we got to a concurrence point on one of the concepts. That concept is what you see here on the screen, which is a write-in, write-out, which allows for people to take rights on and off of SR 500, but not travel across SR 500 and not take lefts. What that means is you have a barrier that goes down essentially the middle of the middle of the roadway. We would make acceleration lanes so that you could enter this roadway more like a freeway. You would enter into a lane that is separate for getting on and come up to speed and then be able to merge in. There's space to make those long enough that they would meet our standard ways to know that people can get up to speed and merge into traffic safely.
Are you going to leave the signals in?
So this would also include removing the signals because...
Removing the signals.
Yes.
Because I think on Polk Road, you'd either have to remove the signal or go behind the light or something there.
There is some reconfiguration needed to make it work. There are some features. So the other piece of this is the idea of to meet the need of addressing pedestrian and bicycle connectivity. There is the intent for a grade-separated bicycle-pedestrian crossing at 54th. What I would observe about this and say, so that it's kind of logged for folks to think about as we start talking about next steps and moving forward, is that the work on SR 500, the barrier, the restriping of lanes to allow for acceleration and deceleration space, and also some of the features of the shoulders right now, which is one, that they're relatively wide, and two, that they have a depth to them, a pavement depth to them, that would suggest that they could be drivable without doing a repaving on them currently. The costs to do that work are relatively low, and the level of effort to bring something like that forward is relatively, not simple, but it's something that can be accomplished in several months as opposed to a couple of years. The pedestrian and bicycle grade-separated crossing is different. It takes a different level of engineering and is a significant component of costs. And so they are sort of mismatched with respect to the time frame and the cost to deliver.
Which one of these is existing?
The existing one is the one that has the loop on the left-hand side at 42nd. That's the bridge that's there now.
I can't remember which street.
Yeah, sure. So, question?
The last update that I think we got from Councilor Stewart was that there was a bus barn that Vancouver School District uses on Stapleton to the south, and also Vancouver Police Department has a... And so I thought what I heard previously was that we were looking at this concept, but only on one of them and leaving one of the lights. So where did that go, and what's the plan for the mitigation for both the buses and the police?
Yeah.
The police.
So we had explored whether or not, what 54th might look like. Because of the risk that's presented by having the lights there, by retaining a light at one of these locations, you would likely retain roughly about half of the accidents you otherwise could remove. That is accidents that are there that are demonstrated that are happening roughly every 4 days. So for us, that presents a challenging quandary of what is the cost and benefit for some out-of-direction travel, and how does that weigh against reducing crashes. So this does not retain a signal in either location. We have worked, so on the outreach audience slide earlier, Vancouver Public Schools is on there as well as the City of Vancouver Police. So we've met with both of them. The school district asked to have sort of notification early enough so they could make adjustments and changes. The way they see it is, one, that you do have a little bit of additional time cost on the front end of a trip, but you also may gain some time efficiency coming back because of the lack of the lights. So for them, they generally see it as a little bit of a wash. There are adjustments to bus routing that would be necessary, for which they would want enough time to plan. The Vancouver Police were interested in seeing whether or not maybe just 42nd could be done and not 54th. We've talked with them about the balance of concerns, and I think have reached a point with them where they are understanding and accepting of a write-in, write-out at both locations. Certainly we are going to work with them to make sure that signal preemption is working effectively at Andreessen, so that the opportunity to go there and U-turn to come back around is there and is working efficiently and effectively. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think to remember about police service is they do have their West Precinct building there. They may or may not always be responding to calls from the West Precinct office. They may be responding to them from out in the community as well. So they have a more dispersed response structure.
Well, I'll tell you who is concerned about this. The neighborhoods are concerned about this.
Yes.
And so that communication hasn't festered enough yet to get to the Vancouver City Council. But it's going to. So as a person who lives on the far west side, 5 minutes longer, or sometimes even 3 minutes longer, for an emergency response coming out of the West Precinct, that they have to go to 500, go right on 500, take the Andreessen off-ramp, go under SR 500, back up the ramp on the other side, and head westbound. That is not a satisfactory solution to anybody I'm talking to who lives on the west side, which sadly has an increasing crime rate of all kinds of crimes, including violent crimes. So to us, it's not satisfactory. But some of us that live in those neighborhoods to the west will be discussing that directly with City of Vancouver and with the police department. Before we leave this slide, I wanted to ask about this improvement for the grade-separated bike and pedestrian crossing. I think it's important, just to put a frame around this, that we not look at SR 500 just in the short term, but that we take a long view. And I'm not suggesting WSDOT isn't doing that. I know it's about money. If that crossing goes in, does that still give us the flexibility in the future to do an overpass? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without tearing out that expensive grade-separated crossing, are we going to design this in a way that we don't have to destroy anything to make future improvements?
I think that we have the opportunity to do that. There's certainly folks who are paying attention to that right now, so we can make sure that that's a viable outcome.
And I'm sure that we'll get to timetable for other improvements. Are they on a different slide?
Yeah, we have a few more.
Okay,
slides.
I'll wait till we get there. Thank you.
So you were talking about citizen concerns. So this is a slide that just has some of these represented. I would highlight one that, yes, we have heard about travel delay concerns around emergency services. We do think there are some countervailing forces there. One, that how folks respond to those incidents, and also the lack of lights and the time efficiencies that are afforded by not having to stop through those lights. There is out-of-direction travel that is in a right-in, right-out concept, so that is a fair assessment. The other things I think that are helpful for you folks as county representatives to understand is what we've heard from county residents of concerns and interests. So folks have been concerned about increased traffic on local streets. They've been concerned about safety on local streets. I would observe that a lot of the neighborhoods that are north of SR 500 between St. John's and Andreessen, which is county area, they are older neighborhoods. They don't necessarily have the same amenities as newer neighborhoods have. So folks are concerned about sidewalks. They're concerned about lighting. They're concerned about travel speeds and other things like that. So we have some information that we understand about the types of changes that this project would introduce. I think that those pre-existing concerns of the community are ones that a project like this sort of rubs against and increases people's frustration around. So we've heard that directly. I know we've also been encouraging county staff with the sidewalk inventory that has been going on to have that information available for folks so that they understand that the county knows what sidewalks are there or not, to also bring forward information about the Truman School rebuild, because that will have some additional sidewalk treatment and sidewalks that go in associated with that, and also to share the Safe Routes to School grant that the county has submitted that is also adjacent to the Truman area. So I think some of those things are helpful for folks to understand that there is attention being paid to these locations, but I think I just want to make sure that I share that with you folks to think about what opportunities may exist within the county for considering what those issues are and ways to address them that are sort of outside effects that we see that we would actually drive as a component of this project.
Does that mean you're not going to help us put lights and sidewalks in?
Well, I think that there, so with the, I would say that with the grade separated pedestrian bicycle crossing, we would want to make sure that that connects. Sidewalks, as we all know, are an expensive proposition, and we don't have the capacity to complete all the sidewalks in the neighborhoods north of SR 500, quite plainly. And so then it's a question of what are the priorities there and how can we work together to bring things forward. One thing that we have done, which you folks helped us with, which we appreciate, was put in a design-only grant application for the state bicycle pedestrian program. Specific to try to support design activities for pedestrian bicycle connectivity north-south that could focus on design for the bridge, but it also might focus on some other connectivity locations. So that could at least help get the ball rolling. So with respect to what that right in, right out concept would cost and funding efforts, this lists some of those basic configuration changes. We anticipate the cost is about $6 million. As I mentioned earlier, the cost to do the work on SR 500 is relatively small. The pedestrian bicycle bridge is around maybe $3-ish million. There is some funding in here, recognizing that we do not fully understand right now what exact mitigation might be needed to address some issues that could occur as a result of making changes. Although, the types of redistribution of traffic we see suggest to us that those impacts may not be as big as they are anticipated by local residents. That's not to say that they don't exist, and that's not to say there won't be some locations that are important. I'm not sure that all the locations that are of concern may end up demonstrating that they have a level of concern raised where there's a breakdown in an intersection per se. So the funding efforts that we're going through, we are seeking funds through agency processes. As I mentioned, we did submit this grant request that had a letter of support from the county. It had a letter of support from the city. The city and county both helped us prepare and submit that. And then also, as I was mentioning around this discussion about sidewalks, we were just having really working with local agencies to say, this is what we've heard and what we see, and can we sort of marry together what different points of care everyone is taking so folks get a better comprehensive picture of what's going on in the area and what changes to expect. The other piece on this, really, which we'll get into is that we have put in a request for costs to improve SR 500 sort of within this year. So that's an ask that's gone forward. It has been, we do have, those funds have been granted through headquarters. to do that work, and so we are considering whether or not we have the opportunity to go forward with that work in the near term.
This write-in, write-out concept. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and specific to, and the funds that we've requested are the funds that are specific to the work on SR 500 because it is an amount that is askable and sort of reallocatable within the framework of the current agency budget for this biennium.
So the infrastructure, sidewalk infrastructure, exists south of SR 500.
Yes.
In my mind's eye, I can't feature. It doesn't seem to me that on the north side of SR 500 at 54th that there is there a sidewalk there?
I believe that on the west side of 54th that there is a stretch of sidewalk. It does not connect all the way up to the next roadway. On the other side of the street, I believe that there's a gap essentially from 54th there might be a street and then it starts up near the park because there's a park there on the east side. And there is sidewalk sort of in front of the park. And I'm kind of looking at the residents back there who I think are nodding their head to say that I'm sort of on point with that, so that's good. So that's, I guess, part of my comment about making sure that that grade-separated crossing fits in. Yeah. On the map, it showed that it was on the east side. I think we're both considering if it's on the west or the east side of 54th. Some of that will be a property availability-based discussion, but it might also be about a connectivity to existing infrastructure.
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense to not have a complete plan. Because
right.
Just getting people across 500
right.
is not helpful if they have nowhere to go from there.
Right. So we'll want to make sure that it connects into a sidewalk and that sidewalk probably gets at least to the next street. There's a question of just how do you balance where does that end and what's the connectivity pieces that are there. So it's not something that we have 100% detail on, but we'll be looking at.
And the school rebuild.
Yes.
What's the name of that school?
Truman. Yeah.
Are we looking at they are going to completely rebuild? They're going to use a different section of the land, Vancouver School District. They're going to build an entirely new building. It will be more than an elementary school. It will have some special purpose. Activity as well, educational.
Mm-hmm.
I think a food bank and some other things are going to go in. Are we working with the school district to see how this will all tie in with the improvements and expansion they'll be making there?
So we've had some conversations. I think primarily we've been working to encourage that conversation through county staff who are already working with the school district on those conversations. So we have not been, we've been working with the school district around the changes on SR 500 and talking about bus access pieces, but mostly have been working through county staff to suggest, can you talk with them about the improvements that they're making and what does the extent of sidewalk look like and what are the treatments at the intersections adjacent to the school and what does that look like? So I think that that's primarily a county to school district conversation. We're happy to carry messages into that, but I think it's more of a primary parties to that are county and the school district.
But it's likely to involve more vehicle trips.
Okay.
So
sure.
That's WashDOT business.
And at different times, I'm assuming, as
yeah.
well, mm-hmm. not just during the school day.
Okay. Sure.
So I'm struggling with the idea that we're doing this as a patch because we don't have enough money to do what we really would like to do. And there's a lot of projects that need attention all over the region. But yet half of what we're spending is going towards a pedestrian and bike bridge. And I don't want that to sound like I don't feel like those things are important, because they are. But there's access within a mile on either side. There's access at Andreessen, which is, I think that's a mile and a quarter, if I remember my mileage signs. I'm driving down 500 and 40 seconds about a mile as well. So, I mean, that's... I'm a through user. I like this concept. It's going to make my commute 10 minutes shorter coming in every morning. I drove this morning, got stopped at both lights. But to think that we're spending half of that money for pedestrian access where I can't think of more than a few few times, but I've actually seen someone crossing 54th there, driving it every day. So that, I mean, can we do this and save that money as a down payment on a future overpass to actually get vehicles and people and bikes and everything across there? Or that's, it seems like that $3 million could be spent in other ways that would benefit pedestrians, bicyclists, and vehicles better in improving those roads to the north and south and those sidewalks where needed. So can we, does this have to be a part of the project, or can we look at, could that money be better spent elsewhere to still benefit pedestrians, bicyclists, and vehicles?
So one, I think let's be clear about, so the request that we've made for funds, which means actual money in the bank to do something with for this biennium, is specific to just the work on SR 500. That's about $550,000.
Okay.
So the idea of the pedestrian bicycle money being absolutely in the bank is, it's not in the bank, so there's not that money to play around with directly in such a way. What I would say is we have passed this concept through a statewide panel that looks at safety issues, and their response to seeing this concept with the pedestrian bicycle connectivity piece in it and with some funds recognizing that there could be some mitigation needed for local roads, they endorsed the concept as sort of the right direction to go. We have heard from folks in the community that the pedestrian bicycle access is important to them. I guess the other point, the other issue there is for vehicles, the out of direction travel that's introduced by this is irritating for sure, but is a relatively simple and not particularly cumbersome effect. And for a walker, the out of direction of a half to three quarters of a mile to go down and out of the way, likely those trips are relatively short anyway. There are a couple of miles, which is maybe a half an hour, so you're talking about potentially at least adding 50% more time onto that trip. And if those folks are folks who are making that trip, who are using that for living activities, school, so the catchment area for Fort Vancouver stretches across SR 500 in this location. It's the only place where the school boundary for a school stretches across SR 500. All the elementary schools really cut at SR 500. So there are students coming to Fort Vancouver from north of 500 who likely, if they miss the bus, I was talking to somebody who went to Fort Vancouver, and he said, I didn't take the bus in the morning. I said, well, why not? He said, well, I just slept in, and then I could walk. And so we know that there are folks who are doing that who are going to school. There may be folks going to BRT to get to work or going to work on Fourth Plain, and also maybe purchasing groceries or other things. I guess the other point I would mention along those lines is that when looking at demographics, compared to county averages for people with disabilities, there is a higher proportion of people with disabilities living in the county neighborhoods north of SR 500. Those folks may be using mobility assistive devices to get across SR 500, and they may or may not have vehicles to get into. So I think that's part of what's driving that piece. It's a question to ask, certainly, and it's a fair question to ask, but that's kind of how we've arrived at that being an important component of what we're looking to try to do over time.
So just to follow up on that, I tend to agree with what, you know, this question that John's brought forward. There already exists an overpass for bicycles and walkers right now. The disability piece is new information to me,
sure,
that you just stated. So that is a concern. But I agree that it's very costly. And since you've put it on this plan, and this is what the outreach has said, I think if it's not going to come about, regardless of the fact that you don't have the money now, because that happens often with plans, there isn't money to do certain things. I think if it were to come off, it better come off pretty soon, mm-hmm, because that is a very frustrating thing, mm-hmm, for citizens.
Absolutely.
That have entertained this whole input and everything. I also think it would be good to get real clear demographics about how this will be used. What is used now? How much is that overpass used now? I don't know if we're able to obtain that. And how could people from 45th, both on the north and the and the south side get to that other overpass if we were to consider not doing it. A lot of things, but I do agree that it's very costly, and it'd be great to have both something to overpass for both walkers, bikers, and cars.
Yeah,
there. So, but
I guess the part that I would add to that is that it's a pretty consistent and common question that comes up is where do you lay your priority matrix, right?
Yes,
so is it just on the vehicles, is it on the pedestrians, how do you balance that? And just from the aspect of cost, anytime you're building a bridge, it's more expensive than paving a roadway. And so it's a very straightforward question that we get frequently. And so from my perspective, one of the things that we have to try and consider is what services are available to those communities, et cetera, and in the community dialogue. What we get out of that, we absolutely have to demonstrate that we're listening at the same time. The other point, though, that you make, which is public expectation. So how do you manage that with what's in, what's out? What does it mean for funding for longer term, those kinds of things? And that's part of what we're trying to do with this. We certainly know that the public has expected full interchanges in these locations. It's no secret that we think there is a potential that they may not be necessary in the form that they were described before in the future. That doesn't mean they're not necessary ever. It just means there might be a different reality, and we kind of want to evaluate that through this process. We wouldn't be here if we didn't have the safety incidents and the crashes right now. Obviously, we would be looking at options that just maintain the status quo. Unfortunately, we feel a diligence and press to have the discussion, which, again, you know, not the most popular person in the room saying we want to take left turns away across 500. But we think it's the right conversation for us to have. That said, we also understand, and that's what you see in phase two there, not to steal the explanation away from Carly, but we also know that we have to demonstrate that what we're doing is a diligence moment for an immediate need, and we need to continue that longer-term discussion. And that longer-term discussion is two parts in my mind. One is the part associated with evaluating what we've done, so traffic counters, things like that, to see what the actual impact is for diversion. But then the other is having that planning level discussion for the future to say, what do we think we can attain, and what do we think we can accomplish, and how do we get the money to do that, because it's not really available now. So we want to have that entire conversation through this second phase so that we can manage that expectation piece, because that's, I think, the most important part.
So can you remind us, the Regional Transportation Council approved a transportation improvement plan a couple months ago, and this, a full overpass at 54th is indicated in there. What year is that? 2038?
So one, I think RTC will be finalizing their RTP later this year, so it's not finalized yet. Although it's been on the list, the way that we presented...
Well, but for the purposes of RTC, which is our Regional Transportation Council...
That's 20-year forecast, is what you mean, right?
Yes. Yeah. What was the forecast date, 2038?
To be honest, I don't remember the date, but I know that we have full interchange at 54th and grade separation, so just a crossing at 42nd as part of that 20-year plan still in there. We've also, though, had the conversation with RTC to say... With this first phase, we also need to evaluate the effectiveness of this first phase and whether or not that full interchange is necessary in the future.
A big picture fix for this, so that we have safe transportation and crossing for the future, and to not isolate either the north side or that south side, which will force more traffic onto Fourth Plain. Although the city of Vancouver is going to get a safety grant for their part of that, or
they
may get a safety grant for that. To wait and imagine that somewhere between 17 or 20 years before we really talk about how important a full interchange is at 54th, should tell all of us, RTC, Clark County, and our other partners that that project needs to be accelerated and we need to advocate for money. I know WSDOT is offering suggestions to mitigate the problem of accidents and flow of traffic. Sometimes we need to focus also on the big picture on a parallel path.
So there's something on the slide that you will like.
So one, just before we leave this, absolutely, one quick question. I just want to clarify this panel that okayed this phase one, for instance, with phase two in view with the pedestrian, was it based upon the second overpass being, the bike and pedestrian path? It was based upon
They were presented with the idea of potentially moving in pieces to deliver an overall total $6 million-ish investment that had the pedestrian bicycle overcrossing, it had the improvements on SR 500, and it had some funds to address emergent issues that present themselves around intersections that show there are problems.
So this was essentially a money panel?
It's
not a safety panel?
Their intent, their role is to look at safety.
Okay.
There is a, typically, per biennia, there are funds to address emergent safety issues around the state. They are the panel that looks at whether or not a project would be sort of reasonable to fund through that, through that pot of funds, but they are not the actual entity that programs those funds.
Okay, great.
Right. So part of it is generating a list of those safety projects that we find to be a priority, which is why on the slide you see phase three, which is complete that element, which is the ped crossing and the mitigation elements, being in July of 2021. We think that's when funding might be available. We can't guarantee that other safety projects won't supplant that, right, because it's it's one of those competitive processes within the state so that we can address those emergent needs. The pot of monies that we're talking about for that phase three and the phase one, just by way of example, are the same pot of money. And so it's a safety element. We're able to garner about $550,000 right now for this first phase. We certainly can't get $6 million right now. So,
okay, we got 5 minutes.
Yes,
okay.
So let's cover something that's really important here. So this essentially lays out the idea of doing the initial safety improvements on SR 500 in the near term. Having this phase two, which has two primary components. One is to look at, is to work on getting funding to make sure phase three comes forward and make sure that that's cemented as soon as we can. And also to evaluate the effects that occur to help determine and inform the mitigation that would come about in phase three. The other component of this, which speaks to that question about what's the long-term plan and what does this mean for long-term, is the second body of text here under phase two, which speaks to a planning discussion of additional needs. So that's essentially the idea of having a forecasted conversation of looking out 20 years and saying, if we have this right in, right out concept, what other needs still exist for that 20-year horizon? That is an attempt to look at new status quo, if we're able to do the right in, right out, and then to see what needs still remain and what that would mean for what to program into RTC's transportation improvement plan, and would be potentially a refinement of the overpass and interchange things that are sitting there right now because we don't have a clearer community answer for what we would want to put in that place. The piece of this also is recognizing that we would commit some funds to that planning discussion. We would also potentially seek funds from our local partners to sort of help support that longer-term planning discussion.
I think let's focus on that for right now, because the rest of these I think we can read through given the time.
Yeah. I guess I'll just say about the other pieces for this idea of paying attention to effects. The slides that are after this really speak to where we might see those effects and the types of tasks, how we would look at those effects, just some meetings that are coming up, and then also some outreach suggestions to get the word out effectively. So that's the other content.
Yeah, and I guess the part that I wanted to add is we understand that this is different from the way we've historically done business. We think that we have funding realities that might drive us to doing business a little bit differently these days, and I know you guys are experiencing the same thing. I think historically we've seen state system, county system, local system, or city street system as almost separate entities, even though to the user out there, when they're in their vehicle or when they're walking or riding the bus, it's almost unrecognizable which system they're on until they certainly get to the higher speed systems, of course. The goal here, frankly, is for us to immediately start into a planning level discussion that addresses some of the questions that you're raising about those longer term needs, but also do that under the evaluation metric of what is the actual impact associated with a potential early decision or this upfront decision this summer to move forward with the right in, right out. My goal is to move forward as quickly as we can, frankly, because I don't want another 80 crashes to occur before we do something. And given a year's time frame, 80 crashes could happen again. The other is weather drives that, because a lot of the work that we would do would be striping, and frankly, you have to do that when it's dry. And then the last thing is to get to the Vancouver school district issue. We need to give them enough time to be able to plan routing and things like that. They've been great partners, as well as county staff and city staff in this. I really feel like we're kind of in a lot of this together, even though it may not always feel that way as watched us driving a discussion. But I will say that our goal is to have this planning work right on the heels so that we can inform that future, not because we have ignored the fact that there's been this expectation out there, but because we want to make sure that we're committed collectively to what the impacts might be on 40th, 4th Plain, and 500, all in association with this change. And so that's why you see up there WashDOT and local partners. We'd love to get some commitment collectively where I continue to advocate for funding from WashDOT to start more planning work for that future, and then see if we can get partnership from county and city as well, so that we can go out and talk to the community and say, what are those long-term needs given this upfront decision for phase one?
Very good. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
I just reminds me of like that book. You know, there's a whole spectrum.